Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Carl Carlson's joined me online. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Fred.
Well, you know, we've talked about reliability in so many different ways. And I think it was you that, you know, when I first talked about this idea of doing a podcast and we'll talk about reliability topics, I don't think it was you, but I remember a couple of the co-hosts were like, well, what are we going to talk about? How many topics are there? there's plenty, I think.
There's plenty. Yes, that's there right. Is.
Well, part of it also is that, you know, the folks that are doing the show, and you and I included, have experience. We've seen a lot of different programs, a lot of different products, and a lot of different circumstances. And so we, beyond just the stories and history that we have, we've also put a lot of thought into this. But we're not the only ones that do that.
That's true.
So that's been my basic approach to this podcast, is that there's plenty of topics and things that we need to look at slightly different ways, or bounce ideas off each other, that kind of stuff.
It actually expands out, and I agree with you, Fred. The as you talk about it more and think about it more, the subjects get broader. They don't get narrower. And so the ideas for discussions and coffee shop topics expand.
Yep, definitely.
Well, I've got one that I've been thinking about.
All right.
I've been it's really a follow-up for those that have been listening to our podcast. We recently talked about the underlying philosophy. And as we were ending off that podcast, and I knew we had time limits, I'd thought of this potential for a debate. And maybe it could be done at a RAMS, maybe it could be done in some other forum. But you know how debates have, you have a resolution, mm-hmm. or resolved that da-da-da-da-da, and then you take one side or the other. So I'm going to pose a debate, and we can begin the debate here, but really open it up to listeners.
Okay.
So here's a debate topic, resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing how to calculate reliability is important, but knowing how to achieve reliability is more important. So that would be the debate topic, and I would love to get a panel of experts and just see which way that goes. I've in my career, reliability calculation was the biggest focus. When the people came to the reliability group, they wanted you to calculate something or analyze some data, mm-hmm. or do a Weibull plot or see what the confidence boundaries tell you about something. So it's reliability statistics, reliability mathematics, and reliability calculations.
Mm-hmm.
In other parts of my career, I've said, you know, I can put time towards calculating reliability, or I can put time towards achieving reliability, like an FMEA or a HALT project, where you don't necessarily arrive at the calculation. FME does not tell you what the reliability value is. And HALT, other than certain versions or interpretations, typically doesn't tell you the reliability value. And so the question then becomes, if I have limited time, where's the value? Should I put my focus and energy around achieving reliability, or should I put my energy and focus around calculating reliability of whatever the design is? In other words, should I try to improve the design to get better reliability, or should I take a look at the existing design and calculate the reliability that already exists? And if the answer is both, well, then the question would become, where should you put most of your energy?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, I would love to have that conversation with the listeners that are here, and maybe at a debate forum sometime in a RAMS. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that topic.
Well, I know what side of the debate I'd like to be on. It's Because I think it's an interesting problem, but it also is one that if you recognize yourself as just being in the measurement category and looking at design and doing the math and doing the statistics and so on, I think this question brings up, well, why are you doing that? What's the value? What's the value of that? And I think the value is the same as achieving reliability. So I think the question is, to me anyway, obvious, is that we'll do a calculation, right? We'll take a look at a circuit board and we'll evaluate different pieces and maybe use a physics of failure model to come up with some numbers of its durability over time. And that's used by the development team, by the management team, sometimes by our customers to say, okay, that's good enough or it's not. They're going to make a decision. And if they deem that, oh, that's not reliable enough, they may try cooling it. They may try more integration. They may use different components to improve its reliability performance. But it goes back to when I first learned about parts count predictions. And I was at Hewlett Packard and a division reliability person called me up and he said, hey, do you have access to a tool that can do a parts count prediction? And I did. I had never used it. And after about 10 minutes of opening that package and dropping in his bill of material, I went off to Dick Moss, who was still working at HP at the time, and said, this is a bunch of bollocks. This is garbage. You know, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, there's a couple of pieces that go into this. Now that the number you get out is going to be pretty much fictitious representation of how it's going to perform in the field. And I says, exactly. That's pretty obvious. Why am I doing this? And he goes, well, first off, that division asked us to do this because their customer requires it. So they're using it to say either, and very likely, they're just going to check off a box that they did a prediction, that it's a requirement, and we boilerplate and we check it off and nobody actually looks at it. Or they're going to integrate it with their larger system and use it as some other form of modeling. So they need that number, whether or not it's real or not. It's kind of the hard part, right? And I said, is that really useful? And he goes, now the other piece of this is you're going to create a model and it's going to have some number. And they're going to compare that to other similar systems and other expectations that they have. And if it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't look like it's good enough, they're going to take steps to reduce parts count, to use more robust parts, do more derating, reduce the temperature, which are all good things for the eventual reliability of the system. And so even though the tool itself doesn't actually give you a valuable number at the end of the day, it drives the right behavior.
And I would say, I would agree that as long as your errors aren't too great, because imagine if you have a gap between your reliability goal and your actual reliability, and your prediction is wrong and you predict that you're going to meet.
And I've seen
that. In which case, you would not drive the right behavior.
Oh, that's I agree. I'm not an advocate of parts count predictions, but especially when it's a customer mandate and it becomes a condition of sale, well, you don't invest a whole lot into the prediction piece and you just do it. On a recent podcast, Andre was talking about he's been working on a standard that looks at using the existing field data back into a prediction model. And so instead of a tabulated set of industry standard numbers that you don't really understand where they came from or how they were gathered or how massaged, is use your own data. And I mean, HP used to have a massive internal database, but we used to do failure analysis to the component level and every test and measurement piece of equipment. So we had great data. But as that went away, we lost that ability. We replaced whole boards or replaced whole units, and we didn't do as much failure analysis, which was a shame, I thought.
And that type of model based on field data integration would be, or I'll go away from that word, but the field data analysis would depend on how much change you have in the future program.
Okay.
If there's a lot of new technology or new applications, then it becomes less applicable.
Well, that's where, I mean, we're kind of eroding the argument for a calculated reliability. There's, but I think my point is that we'll do calculations for the purpose of somebody making a decision along the lines of helping them achieve reliability. It's a feedback mechanism into the design process to say, hey, we're on track or we're not. Whether it's a very poorly executed prediction or a sophisticated set of physics of failure models or test results or whatever. But so I think that the notion here is the team itself that's developing the product is trying to hit some customer expectation about reliability. And so part of their natural work is to achieve the reliability. Where reliability engineers come into play is to supplement their ability to make good decisions, whether it's doing calculations or setting guidelines or identifying risks or whatever. So I look at it as it's obvious to me anyway, that the calculating type approach is a subset of the achieving reliability because they're at the same goal.
Very good. And I would add this as well. I agree with you. I would add this, that I've thought it's always behooved me. It's always been good to know how to calculate reliability, and I include reliability calculations. It's been very important for me to know what the assumptions are and what the limitations are. Mm-hmm. And whenever I do a calculation on reliability or even communicate a calculated number, I always attach to it or be consistent with what the assumptions are, so that the person who hears it doesn't think it's like the absolute rock solid number.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, we've calculated a 90% reliability or whatever, and here's the assumptions that went into it, and here's what we think the limitations are of that calculation. And so I would just encourage listeners to include that in the patter and the discussion whenever you present or talk about or communicate a calculated reliability, is include the information that went into the calculation and what the limitations are of that.
Well, there's a... I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was an IEEE standard a couple of years ago that came out that was looking at reliability test results, basically. If a supplier was going to send their customer, if you were requesting a test result, an accelerated life test or some other evaluation, it wasn't just, it's 90% reliable, 90% confident that we have 95% reliability over 2 years. It was, well, how many samples and what test conditions and, enough information that we can understand what went into creating that figure of merit.
Yes.
And I agree. It's critical, but it goes back to the ability for us to achieve reliability is not just how we do a prediction or how we do a calculation or how we analyze the data. I think there's a bigger piece to this in the achieving reliability, which we don't have great analytical skills to do, is, well, what's the customer's expectation?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
In fact, let me introduce something we talked about offline into the podcast, which is I characterize as the reliability equation. This came from a colleague of mine years ago, and I've used it ever since. I think it's a wonderful way to, let's just imagine the virtual chalkboard here. So we got a piece of chalk, and I'm going to put on the board R equals, and then we have the function sign, the little squiggly F, and in parentheses, let's put the right things in the parentheses. Reliability is a function of, and I'll just throw out some things. And if you have some ideas, it's a function of stress. It's a function of design parameters, which would include dimensions or materials. Anything that goes into the design would include environment usage, which would obviously include the temperatures and the cycles and the loads. So there's a set of things in that function equation where you end up with reliability. And I'm also thinking of a parameter diagram here. If you could imagine the parameter diagram where you have control factors, which are the design parameters, mm-hmm. then up on the top you have the noise factors, where piece-to-piece variation or environment, external environment, system interaction, things like that. So what are your thoughts on that reliability equation? We got a chalkboard. Let's see if we can develop it or talk about what that equation is.
Well, I mean, what I see right away is that there's analytical pieces, and the overall goal is that it allows us to frame or think about us as a reliability team and the design team, what goes into making a good decision. Is this reliable enough or not? So our design parameters, I'm thinking of a mechanical engineering scenario or like a bracket, right? The designer says, well, what's my load? There's a 2x safety factor. I'll design it this way. But the stress is almost never a static one value number, right? And if there's vibration, if it's an impact load, if it's all these different contributors go into it. So all of these other environment usage, all of those elements into it allow us to collect information, to do an analysis, to look at how it affects the failure mechanism. But there's a whole other piece to it is, well, what's a customer consider a failure? Is it, mm-hmm. right? I'm sure you've been in way too many meetings where the design team dismisses a customer's complaint as being, well, that's not important.
Right.
Right. Well, it's the wrong color. And the mm-hmm. design team is going, but it still provides the function. And they said, and the customer sent it back to you. And I make the point is that just cost you money. You made a mistake, and it's not technically something that wore out or, you know, had an infant mortality or had an underlying failure mechanism. But somewhere in that development process, we chose the wrong color.
Right.
And customer said, I'm sending it back.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, is
yeah.
that a quality issue or I don't really care. If soon as we get a warranty claim, it's a problem.
That's right.
Yeah. So I expanded out quite a bit as in going into this reliability equation is what's a failure? And mm-hmm. I tend to define it as anything a customer calls a failure. And I mean anything.
Anything, yeah. So it actually can go beyond the specification. Oh. So you may have specifications, but you didn't anticipate something. And so that is one of the definitions. I've really seen two definitions. One is where the failure doesn't meet requirements, mm-hmm. and the other one is where a discerning customer would bring it back for repair or consider that it needs repair, and they overlap, but they also have differences.
They do, and part of it is that reliability equation cannot leave out the person that's going to decide whether it's working or not.
Yeah, great contribution here. I appreciate that. So one of the reasons why I put the reliability equation up on the chalkboard is to ask students or practitioners, where should the emphasis be? If you have this reliability equation, I like the emphasis to be on selecting the right design parameters, understanding the environment, making the product robust so that it will operate in the environment, understanding the stresses, and putting a lot of focus on that and getting those, I'll call it optimized or selected properly, much like you would do in a parameter diagram, and then calculating the reliability that is the outcome. So I always like to start on the right side of the equation and work with the design teams to make the design good, to design in reliability, to use that mm-hmm. phrase, and then calculate or predict or assess where are we? Are we good enough? Did we meet requirements? So I think it's kind of a working equation. And frankly, I've never been satisfied. I have all the right things on the right side of the equation, and I appreciate a couple additions you just made.
Well, yeah, I tend to focus more on, well, how good does it need to be? Mm-hmm. Right? And from a business perspective, what can I afford as a warranty expense, for example, keeping it as a simple model? Or what's the impact of my reliability performance on market share, of word of mouth, of customer satisfaction, of all of those elements? If I put out a product in a competitive environment that is half as reliable as anybody else's and really adds no particular functionality that makes it unique, it's just going to die. You know, even if it is cheaper, it's, you have to buy three of them to get the same function, you know, duration of functionality as another system. So
Right. You
might have, you know, some success immediately because of the pricing competitiveness. But over time, that's just going to fall away.
It's going to fall away. So where do you end? I'll narrow a question, mm-hmm. Because you have experience at HP and a lot of experience with Halt. Where do you end the cycle of product improvement through use of Halt? Do you just keep going beyond your reliability requirement? Just sometimes you don't even know your reliability has been achieved. In other words, you're beyond it, and you're just making the product better and better. So how do you know as a team member when to cease that improvement?
The program managers decided to start production and ship it. But then I don't stop then either.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
I don't. I go back to Phil Crosby's work on Quality is Free. His work, his book, it's not a textbook, but his nonfiction novel, I guess, I'm not sure if that's the way to describe it, but he talks about that he was facing a debate of, well, what's the right investment for the quality program? And that there's this concept of a diminishing return. The more investigation or work or testing or whatever I do, for an incremental small improvement in the quality performance of the product, at some point, it's not worth the effort, right? Was the prevailing philosophy. And he basically stepped through and just tore that apart and replaced it with is that if you look at the very narrow view of just the warranty cost, for example, or the return rate, then there is a balance point where it costs you $1,000 to make an improvement, but you only save $1,000 in warranty costs. But what doesn't go into that equation and what Crosby was talking about is you have less impact on your engineering team fixing or addressing issues. You can spend more time, you lose the opportunity cost of your development team trying to solve old problems versus creating new products. You don't include in that equation very often in the old style way of thinking of it is what's the customer satisfaction impact on word of mouth sales, on all those elements.
Absolutely. I recall this from many conversations and teachings from Dev Rahija that years ago, mm-hmm. where he always taught me to keep the focus on life cycle costs. And what Crosby is talking about is the life cycle costs, all the costs that aren't just warranty. They're the customer satisfaction and the word of mouth and the other things that you talked about there are all part of the life cycle cost model. And that has to be part of the return on investment equation.
That's right. And that's where it's beyond just calculating the reliability figure of merit. So I tend to focus more on the achieve reliability by framing the decisions and where I can get data and where the data is useful for that decision and for the calculation side is useful, that's a part of the equation. But to answer your question is, when do we stop making improvements? Well, when we retire the product line.
Right. You know? Continuous improvement.
I mean, there is a lot of value in that. And I think the notion or the idea of achieving reliability, well, probably a good place to wrap it up is one of the, and I'll bounce this idea off of you, is you know the definition of reliability from an engineer's point of view, right? It's the probability of success in a given environment over some duration for some function, right?
Sure.
The four elements. Mm-hmm. Well, I often talk about that there's a fifth element that's not included in our textbooks, is that the customer is going to change those all the time. There's, we want more functions, we want a wider and more harsh environment or different environment. We want a longer duration that it lasts in, you know, with a lower probability of failure. The customer's first cell phones that went out had a different set of expectations on its reliability performance than the ones shipping today. Mm-hmm. And so for whatever product it is that we can set a requirement and say it needs to be 99% reliable for 2 years and blah, blah, blah. But in 2 years, the requirement's going to be five nines.
Over time, I've really understand this. Over time, and I'm thinking years and years, the expectations for reliability keeps growing and growing. And people, in the 90s was considered to be adequate reliability. In the 2000s, the expectations are higher. And that has been proven out by manufacturers. In other words, they're meeting higher expectations. And so I agree. There's almost a law there that the trend goes in that direction.
Ooh, that might be our opportunity to get our name on a law.
Yeah. We'll have Fred and Carl law, yes.
That's right. We'll have to frame that somehow and put a nice graph together. But yeah, I totally agree. But the idea is that this achieving reliability is an ongoing process, and it really doesn't end. And we use a whole bevy of different tools and techniques and sometimes calculations to support it. Mm-hmm. But it's a much, in my mind, the debate is simple. It's a simple, we're in the business of achieving reliability, and that's our role to support it with the variety of tools we have. And it's not limited to just doing calculations.
Very good. Good summary.
All right. Well, thanks, Carl. Interesting topic. We'll have to maybe create a formula here and see if we can get, you know, flush it out a little bit more and see what people think. So if you're listening, like I usually do, is let us know what you think. If you've got elements of a reliability equation that you'd like to have included on the chalkboard, if you know what a chalkboard is. I wasn't going to call you out on that earlier, Carl.
No.
Let us know. Reliability.fm. You can find the Speaking of Reliability podcast series, and there's a suggestion box on and comments section that you can get in touch with us, and we'd love to hear from you. So with that, Carl, let's wrap this one up.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.